I mean, they're just not accepting.
No, yeah, I have no desire to.
I mean, it's no problem to like throw it on top of the fire, especially with an extra person, and you know, try to cover it for $50. I mean, we're where we're at, and we have to. But like, I mean, the flatbed. If you're going to be stingy on the flatbed, bro.
Well, that's the thing is when I'm talking to flatbed guys, like,
yeah,
I'm hearing $5 or $6 a mile.
Yeah,
and I don't know. It doesn't match what dead average is. It doesn't match what truck stop average is.
I don't know, man.
I know that the averages I'm seeing is I can sometimes get like $3.50, $4 a mile, but most of the time they want $5 or $6.
Yeah, that's still some of the market that that's trying to keep it where it was at because that's where the rates were
but
at.
But they have control. I mean, I think the flatbed community or whatever have done a good job of quasi keeping control of that part, maybe because it is a tighter, smaller community.
We can't really say that unless you had consistent lanes. Like if you had like,
okay, that's true.
You know what I mean? Then you could say, well, you know, no, you did this for $5 a mile now, but now it's $3.85. I mean, I saw
that's true. Like back then, I didn't touch it. So
yeah, so now we're just trying to learn from it. And these lanes are,
I mean, who knows? Maybe these lanes were going for $10 a mile before.
They could have been some of those. We did like the Alabamas and the Pittsburghs and the Jerseys. We did the zones that had pipe and steel and tubing and stuff like that and steel coils. So I saw the rates go from 285 to 525 in less than 6 months. And that's primarily why I wasn't needed anymore.
Yeah.
We don't need you to build a sales division. I mean, we've got more than we need right now.
Yeah.
So let's build this app and all this kind of stuff. So
we're
rolling, huh?
Yeah, I just thought I'd turn it on and
let's introduce it. You want to introduce it, bro?
Welcome to Young Lion, Old Lion Podcast, where hosts Josh Valera and Tony Darren take you into the world of selling and storytelling. With stories of the hurdles, victories, and current struggles, they'll dive into the instincts and lessons that keep them moving forward, hunting in the jungle of transportation.
Yeah, welcome or welcome back. I'm Josh Valera.
I'm Tony Darren.
And today we're going to
talk about money.
Yeah.
Talking about profit in brokerage. Where's the beef? And all those kinds of questions that people assume that we have, that we're making hand over fist in cash.
Over and over again, especially if you spend any time in like a trucker group.
Yeah.
So like I'm on like a flatbed group on Facebook and follow some Reddit groups. And
I love the Reddit. I'm in a startup Reddit group and I'm in the freight brokers.
Yeah.
And man, and then you get the email every night.
Yeah, when there's like new posts and all of that.
I get an email every night around the same time. I'm like, I usually delete any kind of email that's just, you know, blubber. But then the Reddit ones are like, it's not in transportation, but the startup stuff, those topics are, my owner hasn't paid me in 2 months. Should I quit? I think he did quit.
I think he might have been fired already.
Yeah, I think that's already been made up for you. Yeah, those are great. And then the freight broker group is just—it's cool because it's some of the stuff that like new sellers and new carrier salespeople would ask. They're trying to figure it out.
Yeah,
and we just brought another person into our organization. We like him a lot. He came from a well-known organization, established, and different environments. I think we're more real of an organization, more nuts and bolts. We touch everything along the process. And he's learning a lot, but I'm learning from him just how the automation was at the place he was at.
Beep!
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the automation part is pretty interesting because it was so heavily automated that I think it was almost like, as long as you have a person that'll just do whatever you tell them to do, they can sit down and plug and play.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's like literally just telling them what to do. And
the, what I wanted to get established here, but we didn't have enough historicals that were tracked, was a freight aggregator. And they do have that from what I heard and understood from him telling me. And,
which is kind of what I do. Well, I'm aggregating against
we're
different.
We're kind of doing that now, but all manually.
Well, yeah.
Like what he had was a system that said lane to lane, you know, point to point, and then they would give them the actual rate and a high low.
And they would give a list of carriers that would lane.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
so, yeah. So it's pretty plug and play.
Which is insane when I think we sit back and like, that's what we're competing against.
Yeah.
And there's other places just like that.
Yeah.
That we're competing against. And here we are.
We're winning.
Yeah, we're winning.
I mean, we're winning from those large, huge national organizations. I don't know what it is except for the fact that we've talked about the kinds of freight that we cover, and it's the hard stuff. It's the hazmat, the refrigerated, the temperature controlled.
The flatbed.
The flatbed now. The pain in the butt flatbed, where the driver's asked to wrap their freight and then tarp it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I also got some easy flatbed, but...
No, yeah, true, true. Yeah,
I mean, but, my 10,000-pound flatbed that...
Machinery.
Yeah,
that stuff is good, too. But, I mean, for the most part, it's the hard-to-reach stuff, and those rates have dropped the expectations of the customers trying to get money back from their post-pandemic...
Losses?
Yeah. Yeah, so they're trying to get it back, and even the score... and the rates are just dropping, and it's just crazy. Like, I know the common sense business person in me says that, you know, reads the reports, sees the analytics on it and says, okay, people are shipping less.
Well, can we rewind on that real quick?
Yeah.
Because like about the reports, remember what you said to me, what last week you were like back when we did our first podcast.
Yeah. The DAT.
When we did the DAT update, do you know what I'm talking about? I think it dropped like 40 cents or something, 50 cents.
I had the actual.
I know. I kind of threw you off on that one.
Save that for a reason.
But I thought that was really incredible because it was like a 40 cent.
Yeah.
Drop
so I think on the dry van, it was 240 something. 240 something a mile, if not 239 or something on the spot for dry van. And now it was like. Back then, it was like two weeks ago, maybe, it was 204.
Yeah.
So that's just crazy. And the contracted rates, they're coming down.
And when I first came on, we were talking about it in like, a 5% move was a big deal before.
Yeah, 3 to 5%, you feel it. I mean, it's just crazy. That's just nuts. But I think that we've been, since we started this or restarted this as a startup, you know, we had nothing to lose except everything, but we come in and more so you and I, because we came in at the lowest point.
Yeah.
And, we felt like we're getting some steam, and then March and April just completely flipped the rug out from underneath us. And, you know, May feels good. But you know, we got to get through May to say, okay, how does this look? But we've had a couple of great weeks, knock on wood, what have you. But yeah, so going into that time period, we've been struggling to try to get new business while the rates have been fluctuating so bad.
Yeah, no, the rates are all over the place. It's, you know, you get a new customer on and you're like, oh, well, I'll just quote him what I quoted him last week on that lane just to stay consistent. And then, but the rate drop, you know, another whatever. And now you just lost on this new customer you just got because your rates are so good.
Yeah.
And you were trying to stay consistent, but now you showed that you're not competitive.
Yeah. So I think we're about to see the bottom on the rate situation.
I hope.
I hope so too. Because the entire strategy that was built of let's track our quotes to build that third component of a freight aggregator, you're trying to take national averages from two different systems, then put your historicals into it, and then you get kind of an average. Mm-hmm. So you have a high low on that. That was the possibility by tracking our quotes, but it was also to say, okay, what do we win and what rate do we win it at? So mm-hmm. we don't have to go through the process. Just, we got a winning rate, put her in there again.
Yep.
And that's what you're explaining. We were losing, and we have been losing rates that we've won at. And it's very, very frustrating for me because I do a lot of the quotes and I want to get to a point where I'm not taking so much time trying to analyze to say, okay, what can we cover it for, make a dollar and still service the customer at the rate they expect.
Yeah.
And it's still dropping. But
I think there has been some fluctuation recently where it's like I don't know if it's the shipper is like realizing, well, oh boy, like we did it for that last time. Maybe I'll take it for a little bit more because I've seen some like little bit higher rates get accepted, a little bit less looking for the bottom, okay, I think this is a safe place where we can save some money and get it covered and taken care of on the shipper's perspective.
Because
like the one today where you and I had like a $50 difference, which as a part of that quote is probably like 5 or 6% of, you know, the total revenue. Yeah. So, which 5 or 6% is a big deal in this market, you know? But I think between rapport and kind of the anecdotal experiences with that customer and kind of how they've been picking and awarding lanes, I was pretty confident that.
Yeah, it's crazy because I agree with you on that. I still think it's like they're still trying to take care of the carriers that are quoting. I haven't given them I haven't given them a load in a couple of days. I better do that so they stay interested and keep quoting me.
Well, also that customer apologized to me because there was a different load that he sent out for quotes. And he's like, I don't know how you didn't get on that.
Oh, cool.
Which was that Rhode Island garbage.
You did get on it.
Well, I know because then he sent it to me because he still didn't have it covered. But then I got it and it was.
We didn't hear back from that.
No.
All right. Now we're talking shop. But
yeah.
Yeah, so in all of this, we've got these relationships that we're trying to build with carriers, and we've been very transparent with them. Some of the folks that have done multiple loads for us, shipments for us, they don't do this so much, but the newer carriers are saying, "Oh, come on, guys, you're making too much money. You can."
Oh yeah, I mean, we've heard the $500-$600. How much money do you think I'm making on this? Oh, you're making $500 or $600 easy. Like what?
I mean,
since when?
When I first got here, I think they were still trying to hold on to a 10 to 15% margin goal.
Oh no, it was 15%.
15%
or more.
And there was no way that was going to happen. So if you take a look at some of the spotting customers we've got, that I do most of them, those, each month we had maybe one truck that we moved with them, with one of those customers on the quoting resource we go to every day.
So I'm,
three or four customers that I quote every day.
And only one of them a month would be a matching rate that we had already done.
Like where we've got, maybe we've won 15 this week.
Mm-hmm.
They won one a month.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if they weren't winning it with 15%, then they weren't quoting it, or they were quoting it with cost plus 15%. And they're like, I'm sure they're going, no, not going to get that one. Not going to get that one because the rates were coming down and starting to get tight then. And we weren't reacting and responding.
Yeah, we're just doing the same thing, expecting the same results.
So that was the whole push of, well, let's track what we're quoting this at and seeing if we're losing it. And if we're losing it, why are we quoting the same dollar amount?
Yeah.
It's going to be harder to cover. Yeah. But we weren't making, some of the rates that we were covering stuff at, like, I felt we had $300, we were getting $50 on it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, if we're going to get $50.
Well, that's what I have to say is that the whole team together kind of turned that around where we're quoting real, real tight and making $50.
It's amazing because when we first got here, and I'm saying we, not because we're just on this podcast together, but it was the sales force. I mean, it was a strategy and the effort and getting new quotes and trying to win stuff from customers that were allowing us to quote. Well, it's not working. So we've got to do something here.
Well, and especially try telling a sales guy like, hey man, yeah, we're going to quote it at a lower margin.
Yeah.
We're going to quote it at 0% of the market. We're going to quote it at -5% of the market.
Yeah.
Tell a salesperson that.
Yeah.
And see how they react. They're going to be pissed off.
Yeah.
But the truth is that dollar and cents if you don't have the volume, margin doesn't matter.
Well, the challenge is, and the challenge still is, challenge was and still is that we're waiting for the carriers to catch up with what the reality of it is out there for the shippers, what rates they're looking for to move freight at. And I think carriers have contracted lanes, they have contracted customers, I would say agreements with customers for said rate to go certain lanes. They use the load boards and all that and work with folks like us to try to get backhauls from. But now they're trying to get head hauls. They're trying to get main lanes because they've got equipment that probably got lost out on a contracted rate that they went to spot with. Well, and now
an equipment that they bought when rates were through the roof.
Yeah. And they're trying to fill up.
And yeah, now they're screwed on assets because they have all of this money going out to, you know, pay for these assets that there's almost no way that they're going to be able to
make up for in this market. In my opinion, you can mothball equipment, you can sell, you can make money in this market. So the equipment isn't a big thing for me in my head, but the drivers are. And if you're not keeping them busy and you lose them, you don't get them back. I mean, some of them do recycle. I mean, they do go back to carriers that they've had good relationships with, but the freight wasn't there, so they moved someplace else. But if you lose consistent work, you lose the drivers for a while, if not forever. And that's the biggest travesty, trying to get drivers back in. If you sit there and you talk to Michael, who's our chief people guy, he'll have just horror stories of what it takes to get people to come in, to listen to us, to say, okay, what makes you different than the other organization I was at? If you lose those drivers, it's like, it's much worse than a startup like we're facing with trying to get new customers and business. But I think that they were trying to keep those drivers busy is my whole point.
You know, I see that and I hear it, but like I hear it from the companies too.
Yeah.
But it's like it comes back to the overhead thing where they argue that, well, my cost to run that truck is this.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's a little bit of BS.
Everything's more expensive though. Auto parts more expensive, labor's more expensive. So to run the equipment, it's a lot of it is tires, fuel, maintenance.
Well, no, I'm not disagreeing with them.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying is like, where are the carriers with the low overhead?
There's no carriers with low overhead. You can't have dated equipment. You can't not repair.
But that's my point is like, I think that's where the shippers are stabilizing out at. And I think that's why we're so close to the bottom right now is because they hit this point where it's like, whoa, when we dip that low, we're hitting bottom of the barrel, breakdowns, flat tires, not properly maintained, running late.
That's the other thing that is freaky about this is that it's got to be the retail that's pushing it, but there's not a lot of rejections. And there's not a lot of I can't think of the term that they call it. I guess simply it's no shows with drivers.
Oh, a driver no shows. Yeah. Okay. Because the driver rejection rate is down, right? Because it's normally like 5-10%.
Yeah, but you would think that I'm not doing it for these rates, so
they're going to cherry pick the best rate, and now
they're realizing there's no great rates to choose from.
Yep.
So now I've got to settle. And that's kind of where I see us, where we're at right now, where when we're pushing like a DAT, like national average, and then maybe $25-$50 to be safe, we're not winning all of those.
Nope.
You've got to go below the national average on spot to really have a good chance at winning. But then what do you expect to make in margin? Because if you get a $2,000 truckload, you ain't making 10%.
No.
Making 5%?
No.
I mean, and not at that.
Depending on the shipper, no. You're making 2%, 2.5% maybe.
So now what we're facing with and what we're looking at is that, I feel we can probably get revenue, but like the margin, oh my goodness. That's the hard thing. So we were looking at a certain dollar amount to make margin. Everything is kind of copacetic with each other. Nope. Now we've got it up at 30-40% from the number we thought because of just how the margin is trending out. But that's a constant thing. I don't think it's not going to get fat and happy this year.
No,
it's not.
There's no chance.
My hope is that the shipper starts understanding that we aren't getting quality partnerships. There's trucks that aren't showing up. The drivers, I mean, the things that happen, the breakdowns per se, all the kind of stuff. We're seeing a lot more of this than we've seen when the rates were fat and happy.
Well, it's because they can cherry, you know, they,
that's just it.
They get a different one offered and they're like, oh shoot, not for $150 more. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm going to hop over there.
Truckers, we know what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and quite frankly, we're relaying the messages we get from the carriers that we select. Some of these carriers are new because we're trying to grow new freight lanes, new freight customers. So we're moving freight in areas that we probably haven't done a lot. And they're in, you know, God's country. So it's not really, you know, Atlanta, Chicago or whatever. And we're finding out, you know, who our true partners are some of the times with these new customers.
And there's some fantastic small carriers that are new partnerships.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yep.
And one of those things that comes back to is like, mom and pop, where are you parking your truck at night?
Yeah.
In the driveway or in the backyard or whatever, you know? Yep. So you're not paying for a yard. You're not paying for this. You're not paying for that.
Yeah.
You're not paying for, you know, a whole administration team, you know, Betty at home's taking care of it for you, you know,
or Tommy at home
or Tom, whatever.
To be sexist. Yeah. But like, I mean, those people are like the salt of the earth. I mean, they know what they can live with. They're not comfortable, but I think that they understand.
Well, they know this whole market's unfair.
Yeah.
And I think that like the realist in them knows that like everybody's getting the short end of the stick except the shippers right now.
Yeah.
Other than like they're the ones driving things low and what are we going to do?
And the shippers are still shipping as far as the manufacturers. Retail manufacturers, meaning people that manufacture goods for home use, personal use. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's downsized so much. I'm really confused about the retail sector as far as the numbers that...
Like home goods and stuff?
Yeah, because I think that Amazon really screwed it up. So the way they're tracking it is different.
Yeah.
I mean, it's moving on a newer, world's largest private transportation network. And I don't know if that data is accurate and accurately... you know, portrayed. Walmart's been around for a while. They were once the largest private transportation company in the world, at least in the U.S.
And they do a ton of online selling too, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they do.
Yeah,
they do.
I mean,
online. Everybody does and all that. And it's just, I think some of the gadgets and things are small enough to ship in the USPS.
Well, that's kind of where I was going with that, is that you have all of these big retailers pushing to the, how can we be Amazon-esque?
Yeah.
Obviously, that is the way things are trending.
Yep.
And the way to do that is by, you know, maybe doing an online-only sale where things in the store aren't on sale, but if you go online, you get it for sale, right?
Yep.
And then that equates to parcel shipments versus anything else from a warehouse, from a...
Here's where I'm saying that, and you're right. And what I'm saying is,
I'm not saying you're wrong.
I'm trying to explain more of this because you brought up a good point with the parcel thing. The USPS can be tracked as a parcel. Obviously, UPS, I don't think it goes that route. It's too expensive. But the Amazon delivery folks that, you know, mm-hmm. got the Sprinter vans, when they've got this TV remote,
mm-hmm.
right? I ordered this and I got it yesterday. It was a 2-day thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got this thing today.
Yeah.
Right. So Amazon doesn't ship this in a truck. It by itself, it ships it with 50 other ones.
Mm-hmm.
Then they break that box open at the warehouse distribution center and then they package it individually.
Yep.
So I don't know if the one box is listed as one 50-pound box or if it's part of a freight, but this gets tracked as a parcel or an individual shipment, and it's not considered a freight shipment, but it came originally that way.
Yep.
It just got broken down at a distribution center.
Well, that's what I mean by it, too. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, the retail thing, that's why it's fuzzy to me in my head, and I don't quite know if that's being tracked.
Oh, no, I'm sure it's skewing the numbers.
Yeah, but they're saying that the shipments down. Shipments are down.
You know what I found interesting today? I didn't talk about this during the workday, mm-hmm. is I called over lunch to get another shipment. I because I have the horse farm,
yeah.
I get like gravel shipped in from a local quarry and stuff.
Wow.
Well, I called in to get 20 tons of limestone shipped in, limestone screenings. We use it to level out horse stalls and use it for the fields because it's very, very fine. And so it packs down really hard. It almost turns into like a concrete.
Divots in the field?
It gets rid of, well, no, it's more like to like the part where you, the gate where you walk in and out of the fields.
Oh, okay.
To like clean up that area so it doesn't get so muddy because there's so much foot traffic.
Yep.
Or hoof traffic. Hmm. But I called and last year it was like, I got like same week.
Yeah.
They dropped it off.
Yeah.
And then I ordered another 20 ton and got it dropped off the next week. Like not a big deal.
Okay.
I called today and she said, I'm sorry, but we're actually not adding anything more to the board right now. We're actually booked out for the next 2 weeks and we're not taking any orders.
For beyond 2 weeks?
She said, yeah. She said, call me back in a couple weeks and hopefully the board, you know, like we get some of this stuff handled.
I wonder if that's like a labor thing or
a I don't thing. Know, but as far as like that's trucking. You know, I mean, there's logistics apps for finding dump truck drivers and stuff. I mean, it's all out there.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was super interesting for a market that seems on the downtrend. From what I understand, you know, I'm a little college educated. Is that typically when you're coming out of downtimes,
mm-hmm.
the first things that really start to move is like home construction and home improvement. And those are signs of like economic, positive economic movement.
Hmm.
So I thought it was just really interesting because like, I mean, obviously you have like the school right next to our office. They're doing construction and building a whole new building.
Yeah.
The school out where my wife works, they're doing construction and adding, right? And so like there's these projects going on right now and there's some sort of growth and movement, I think. I don't know. I have no proof. It's all anecdotal.
Well, that's optimistic. I'm just wondering if it's tis the season, you know.
Well, I mean, kids are out of school. Yeah, I mean, we're moving into spring, into the summer, and that's when you do all your construction. But if it was really that bad.
Yeah.
I mean, the paper I just wrote at the end of my semester was about a lot of this economic movement and the stock market and how, I mean, I had covered 5 different articles in my paper and they talked about some of the same points in each one of them and gave a different outcome for the next 6 months.
Oh, really?
Yeah. All of them. But it's just like with the information, there's so many different causes, so many different ways you can look at it.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't see. I don't know. I don't see this sustaining. I see a bottom very, very short. And probably by the end of Q2, beginning of Q3, I think is when we'll kind of tip that bottom. And then
that's kind of their predictor. And this isn't like, I mean, technically, I'm not sure, but I think it's almost technically a recession. But it's not like the financial crisis.
Well, they just changed the definition of recession so that it can't be considered one.
Yeah, I guess so. That's also accurate. But I think that it's just, you know, it's not the financial crisis of 08, 09.
Absolutely
where
not.
It took 2 years to really repair in 2010. I mean, in transportation, that didn't really impact a lot. It still moved. Things were a little bit tighter.
Were there massive layoffs back then? Like in the transportation world?
Yeah, there were layoffs. I was directly impacted positively when Yellow and Roadway merged to be YRC because they wanted to be more financially viable.
Mm-hmm.
They had a lot of unionized workforce. They had a lot of things.
Were they separated like East and West or like regionally? And then they combined?
It was like total separate companies under a holding company.
No, but I mean like as far as like them when they were separate companies. No, they
They had the same
webs,
same okay. everything. And our systems were almost the same, just branded differently. So coming together wasn't a big deal. But Salesforce realized there's two of me now, so I know one of us is going to go. And then it was kind of like an all-star game getting picked. And that's where I had one of the best years there was in that year when they were selecting. So I was going to be good. But their stock price went from $40 to $16 down to $1.23 a share. And I said, I don't know if they're going to be around.
Yeah.
And I got recruited from another company for the Chicago market to be a national salesperson for them because they wanted to develop more of those larger customers. They wanted my customers, really, from RC. So they didn't have non-competes back then. Well, at least for that world I lived in. And so I actually made out better through that process, but there were layoffs technically.
Mm-hmm.
But hiring was slowed tremendously through that whole time. No one wanted to spend money.
Yep.
So infrastructure, it stayed. If you spent it, you got it again, but you weren't getting purchase orders or approvals, REFCOs, all those kinds of things weren't being approved for large add-ons or build-ups. So that stuff was tight, and it was tight for like 2 years. There was a fuel crisis in the middle there too. So almost the same stuff, except not as dramatic.
Yeah.
But we're going to put the country, the people are going to put the country in a recession or a recovery based on just the crap that we talk about and focus our lives on.
Yeah.
I mean, if we were optimistic about what this is going to be, especially in the transportation environment, I think that we can see that it's bottoming, trending up, possibly. We need to plan for it.
Mm-hmm.
This is where smart people, you know, that it's the whole Warren Buffett thing. Part of his strategy was that, you know, when people are scared,
buy or whatever,
something like that. Yeah. Invest when the market is uncertain, invest and all that stuff. That's, you know, usually where the smart business people, they stay that way because they know that this is the time. Like, I've got savings that we're looking at options to go into, and it's stock market is attractive because I know there's solid stocks out there that are just down because of where
they're discount. I mean,
it's exactly what it is. It's discounted stock price.
Yeah.
And, if you've invested or saved over the good times, it's just like the squirrel that stores the nuts, you know, it's what it is. But anyway, I'm just rambling, but yeah, I guess to go back to what makes sense in this conversation, I think those carriers out there are starting to understand that I'm not going to get the rate. It's not coming back to what I want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to listen to this third party logistics company and say, okay, I need to get back, because really they should be using us to get back from where they got the big, you know, money chunk from, like our asset side does.
Mm-hmm.
They use 3PLs for backhauls. They move my driver because I don't have a customer that's going to return them. And I think that because the market's down, because the shipping is down, they're looking to us for that head haul.
Yeah.
And they're willing to do the deadheading and all that kind of stuff, but they want to get paid for it. So what I want to pull, you know, my hair out is when we've got our carrier guys, which are both great, when they're hearing the rates out there. Well, yeah, they're giving you their, especially when our new guy, what did he say? He said, where you need to be at? Not, I need to be here, but asking the carrier, where do they need to be at? I'm like, well, you just
opened yourself up for
anything.
This is going
to take forever, and you got to know. And I mean, you've got to be real. You got to be transparent with them and say, listen, fare rate on this is going to be this. I'll give you $20 over that fare rate. Take it or leave it kind of a thing. This is what we've got. But when we're talking about, you know, like when we're hearing, if we have $3,500 in it, we can make $200 on it perhaps. And they're starting off at $6,000.
Yeah.
We're trying to get them down to 35.
Like, yeah.
You know, it's,
I find it funny. So I always view, like, because I'm in customer sales, I'm not in carrier sales.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the car business, like we always used to say, like, the moment the manager touches it, you lose all your money.
Yeah.
I view like that the same way. Like, don't let me close my own trucks.
Yeah.
Like, because if I close it, I'm going to get a truck on it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like, yeah. I care about margin, but like at the end of the day, like,
you're trying to build customers and their expectations need to be met.
Like this, you know, breaking even on this one, making $0 in margin with a new customer means that I showed them that I can handle it in 10 minutes from when they tender it to me.
Yeah.
Like, that means a lot more to my customer than, you know, me being happy because I, you know, made $100 instead of 50.
Well, you've got to win it. And like we talked about that being at national average or just below that, we know it's going to be a fight when we get into a discussion with a carrier, you know, because they're expecting more than that.
Yeah.
And we're trying to make a dollar at it. So if we're negotiating, we can get 25 or 50 bucks on a new customer on something that just turned quick like that.
Yeah.
We're taking that now where I'm sure most 3PLs wouldn't even look at that a year ago or whatever. Back to the topic is there money in brokerage? Not as much, not even half as what it was. Mom's calling.
Oh, no, that's my father-in-law.
And well, we're about to wrap. So. Yeah,
no, it's fine. But, I want you to finish your.
No, but I was going to say that that margin isn't even half of what it was a year ago. And consistently, we have to do more closes as customer sales. We need more customers, more freight, because we're needing.
It's almost 50% more shipments. Yeah. To hit the revenue levels, to hit the margin levels.
Yeah, we had a goal at 25%, winning 25% of all of our spot quotes to hit our goals that we had planned.
But that's now, what we started at, and then I did the math, month and a half later?
35%.
Yeah.
Probably 40 to 45%.
Because now. I haven't done the math in like 2 months.
Yeah.
But yeah, if I did the math again, it probably would be 45% of our spots.
So we have to be aggressive anyway to win the freight. But now we have to win half of our spots.
But since we came in, since you came in, we have more contracted lanes than we had before.
Well, yeah, but I mean, they also had tons before
were
lost. Yeah, yeah. If you were to say, okay, what I'm saying is
true contracted lanes. When we walked in, there were maybe some contracted rates.
Yeah.
And maybe if that lane pops up kind of thing.
Yeah.
But like, as far, I mean, we have twice a week, we have once a week.
Yeah. We have stuff.
We have stuff that didn't exist when we walked in.
Yeah. So,
I mean, our spot has grown.
Yeah. But we're still dependent on it. And I think that's where we'll leave it in the discussion right now, is that we are spot dependent. Brokerages mostly are. The large, huge brokerages, I know they've got managed or account management percentiles of their overall business is actually, okay, we do these lanes for them. But I still say we see our customers putting out bids monthly and quarterly, and I know they're doing it with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when the spot and the contract are meeting hand in hand, it's just becoming a spot-centric industry. And I think these past 4 or 5 months have really sharpened our axes because we didn't have that contracted stuff. We may have grown by a couple of customers that we know we've got stuff that's going to be able to be worked every week.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, where we make our money is not in that rate, not in that contracted rate. It's the spots that, because we know the carriers that can do that lane, we've worked the carrier relationship enough to make that extra profit.
Well, I think that's what the contract lanes give us too.
Yeah.
Because for example, the one that delivers into Canada.
Yeah.
That opened up our eyes to, wow, Canada's, it's nice up there this time of year.
They like the US dollar.
Yes, they do. Yeah. So, but I just think that that's just, there's a lot to gain just from having the repetition, having the lanes, and like getting the opportunities to, and we've been given a lot of opportunities by our different shippers to try stuff out. And then
we've learned that there's lanes that we don't want to even look at again.
Yep.
But we like Toronto. outbound and inbound.
Yeah.
I'd say we didn't do the horse crapper.
Yeah. Yeah.
But,
let's end on the horse crapper fertilizer. Yeah.
So let's do that. Everybody loves it, Josh. Yeah. Everybody loves this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm going to move tonight when I go home?
Manure.
Some horse crap.
Speaking of such, we've got three, like we usually do. But here's the first one, horse crap or fertilizer. Horse crap means it's wrong, and fertilizer means it's accurate, it's correct. So horse crap or fertilizer, a penny dropped from the top of the Empire State Building will kill you. A long way.
Horse crap.
It is horse crap. These are things that people have heard throughout
Terminal velocity?
I'll talk to you right about
that. Is that what you're... Okay. Yeah, because that's what I was thinking about. Terminal velocity of something going down, it just stays the same speed once it hits it.
Yeah, I think people imagine it that like it gains momentum
and speed,
but it only has so much weight and mass.
Yeah.
So a penny traveling at terminal velocity cannot penetrate concrete or asphalt. It won't cause serious damage to a person, and even at the speed of sound, will still not damage flesh. At most, it would sting a little.
Well, yeah, because what I think about is like, what if you threw a penny at me as hard as you could?
It might be the same, right? I mean,
but like even as hard as you could probably throw a penny physically,
yeah,
has got to be moving as fast or faster than.
I don't know. I'm pretty old. Can't throw hard anymore.
You can try to hide those guns with that shirt, but I see them.
Boom. You can see the Great Wall of China from space.
That's fertilizer.
That is fertilizer.
I'm a nerd, by the way. But these questions are not good for my nerdy self.
But that's good. But NASA confirmed that the Great Wall of China, frequently billed as the only man-made object visible from space, can't be seen from the final frontier. Although the fact was debunked by Chinese astronaut Yang Liwei, the textbooks were never changed and will often still claim this to be true. So that is fertilizer. No, you're right.
No, I thought you just said it's horse crap.
No, it's been debunked, but it was inaccurately debunked. You can actually see it from space.
Okay.
So that is fertilizer. Cracking your knuckles will give you arthritis.
Horse crap.
It is horse crap. This was probably told to you by people who can't stand the sound of bones popping, cracking your knuckles or other body parts will not give you arthritis. The noise
what it will give you
is,
I thought it was like fluid in your joints or something. Is that arthritis? I thought arthritis is like bone growths or whatever.
I don't know for sure. Luckily.
Okay.
The noise of cracking or popping in our joints is actually nitrogen bubbles bursting in our synovial fluid.
Okay.
He wrote, it does not lead to arthritis, but maybe that fluid can build.
Yeah, I thought that was like a thing. It creates space and like friction. And
depends on what arthritis. I mean, rheumatoid is different.
Yeah, rheumatoid is the one that's like bone growths, isn't it?
No, it's
different. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I'm in transportation.
There you go. But yeah, to put a tie on this one here, man, we are not making, if you want to talk about making money, which would be most likely the topic of this podcast, we're making money, but less. This is not as profitable of a business as it was over a year ago. It will eventually get back there. So now it's the test of attrition. Can you have a viable business and stand the test of time and stand the test of this and arrive on the other side of it when the rates and the need start to regulate itself and balance itself out?
Well, I think with that, if you can survive this, your company can survive it, and you find a way to make money in this market,
yeah,
the potential to make money later on is exponential.
Yep.
Absolutely through the moon. Because that means you can operate on low cost,
yeah,
with high success rates.
Yep.
You've sharpened the pencil, sharpened the axe, however you want to put it. I mean, to that razor fine pinpoint that gets the job done, mm-hmm, with low overhead. I mean, that's what you're doing.
And you build experience. So if you can keep your team together, they know they've been through this before. So in 2 or 3 years when it happens again.
Because it's cyclical.
Yeah, yep. It is. Yeah, so I don't know how long it's going to last after this part of it, but people will remember that they got through it. And I think that's what this is right now, is that it's not full-fledged where people are panicking.
Because I think you have old heads that went through 08.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yep. And the industries that are really impacted are the ones that weren't making money and didn't have a game plan to do so. I mean, it's the tech industry. I mean, I'm sorry.
Well, yeah,
I
know it's the young kids in the game, right? The ones that didn't go through the last.
And it really sucks. I don't want to get too much into it, but I mean, these young folks that are coming out of college and have these aspirations to be with an exciting organization that's growing and changing the world, they aren't taught the business model, how to make profit.
Yeah.
They're taught on how to get the next round funded.
Yeah. Which is insane because the Change the World companies, your nonprofits, all of those.
Yeah.
All the people at the top make a ton of money.
And they get out quick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, come work for my company. I mean, I don't know what, you know, 35 CEO that had a good idea. They become the CEO and then they bring all people my age in. Mm-hmm. Then that young staff kind of gets debunked and moved on. They get the payout. They're still founder. They want to do something else. But it's almost like they don't trust the young generation to turn the profit or to create a real business out of this good idea and this energy you've created. And they've got to fight for that. They get escorted out with nice, beautiful golden parachutes. And then these old guys like me come in and say, well, we'll create the business model behind it. And it becomes like everything else.
Yep.
And then it either dies quickly or you get these 2,000 layoffs.
Yep.
It's the same game plan, and it's the same old people that are doing it.
And oh, yeah, because they're reaching in the toolbox and pulling out the right tool for the job.
The
first one, they need development, and that's going to be the younger generation, and then they need the old heads to manage.
Yeah, these people that do these TED Talks and stuff, it's, I mean, I could talk my ear off about aspirations and idealism and all that kind of stuff, and I think that there's greatness in thinking and talking through great things that you want to do for people and with people, but that person that's talking in the TED Talk didn't really do it. They're selling you on the fact that they're doing it within the organizations that they run or they used to run, but they're picking and cherry picking. Cause I've done it too. And I've explained like a job interviews or something like, well, how'd you do that? Well, I can give you the glamorous side of it, but really it was, I mean, I can explain, well, Josh and I stayed an hour late and then somebody called him back and then I worked up the number and Josh had the phone call and we got him. But I could glamorize that and say, yeah, you know, we've got the prospecting system in place. We have the 8 points of contact here. Josh, it worked. Josh pulled me in. We worked up the numbers. We got them this beautiful arrangement of contract/spot pricing options, gave it back to them. We walked them through it on a conference call. We sold it. They signed off. We started doing business. Things were great. No, it was more of the latter than what I said before. You know,
it's my army thing. I think I told you it's like every time something awesome happened, 30 seconds later, some dumb stuff happened.
But depending on the crowd,
do I tell the first half?
Yeah.
Or do I tell just the first half or do I tell the first half and the second half?
And that's what I think of those TED Talks. I'm going to tell you the snazzy version.
Yeah.
Of how we get it. But I mean, I don't believe in luck. I believe in timing. I believe in effort. I believe in people that join together for a purpose. I think there's energy in that creates opportunity. Mm-hmm. So that stuff can actually happen. But I don't know how I got down this road, but I guess it's passion of mine. Just the farce that's out there that, you know, these old gray-haired people, they just have this game plan. It just works. They've been surrounded by good people in good situations and
who've been through hard times
and have been through hard times and know what it looks like.
Yep.
And I think if any skill set you've got as a more of a senior person and on a team is that you've been through it before and you need to help other people, let them know, hey, times are tough. I may lose my job because of the salary impact, but this is going to be fine. And quite frankly, that's not too far from the truth. I mean, if our owner want to say, well, I can't lose any more money, I got to stop. I'm like, sucks, but okay, let's detach me. Does it? Yeah. I mean, if you want this organization
But you already built the team.
But you know it's going to work.
Well, that's the thing. Is like you already built the team. You already did the hard part.
I disagree with you. You talking about me?
Well, yeah, I'm saying that's the hard part. The hard part is building the team, setting the game plan, and implementing the game plan.
Now we're going something different. I will say this.
We can go down
this. But let me answer it because now you got me hot. You guys built the team.
No.
I really, this has to be understood.
I don't have any tissues. We can't go down this road.
No.
Make me cry over here.
What has to happen is that the person, like a me, has to understand that I got to allow things and I got to stop things. And I try to tell you through the process, like, yeah, I can't say that to him because I need him to be this.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
We've had those conversations. Yeah,
yeah. But all that stuff allows you people to join hands. You've got, and the type of person you are, that, so yeah, I saw that in you a bit. You want to connect.
Absolutely.
And people appreciate the fact that you want to connect, but you connect constructively. You kind of gear up towards people's personalities because you got the chameleon gene in you.
Yep.
So you know, okay, I know if I'm going to connect with this person, I got to be a little bit more like this.
Yep.
So that's where you were kind of a glue person to come in and do that, and it brought more energy out of a guy like Brevin.
Mm-hmm.
Then bringing these people in on a mistake of mine, hiring somebody that didn't work out, and say, okay, if you guys want, let's all get together and pick. And then
I think that was a huge healing moment, by the way.
Yeah, that was. And it was so silly because it wasn't like, it was me saying, you're too busy. Let me take all of this. And I mean, I've brought people in, but it was also me being anxious of, we got to get somebody in here that can help us with this. And it forced a bad decision. So, I mean,
well, I wouldn't say it was a bad decision. It was like a decision and a necessity.
It didn't work out either.
It didn't work out, but it's not necessarily a bad decision.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just.
But anyway, like, I think that, like, as far as the team is the closest they've ever been. I think the new hire is an absolute puzzle piece.
Yeah.
A contrasting personality.
That we need.
But it, absolutely that we need. Like, it's not a. It's not like butting heads. It's just like a puzzle piece fitting in because, I mean, I would be lying if I said I didn't have a very unique personality, sense of humor, all of the above.
Yeah.
But like just
that's,
to have the.
That's key though, that we're all able to get through it. And just, it's not even, we ask each other, can you help out or whatever, but it's like, we see it before it really happens. If we don't, it's because we're so glued in and trying to get something done so it can help the team.
Yeah.
But yeah, back to tying this together is that we are making money, not as much as we want to right now, but the key is that we have to do greater, bigger things on the revenue side so we can make up where we should be in a normal market. So if you're coming into the, if people are asking, should I open my own brokerage? No, do not do that now. Do not do that now. We'll let you know when you're about, you should be buying a laptop and a better internet connection and getting your IDs and passwords for the load boards. But right now, stay where you're at, work harder and save your money.
And honestly, I think do research, you know, and research the market,
stay updated,
follow the trends, like, do your like due diligence, like if you were starting a brokerage.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep vetting the process.
Gain the knowledge. Like gain the knowledge of the process so that you can experience this market without losing money in this market.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the biggest risk is that you enter this market right now, you're gonna lose money.
Yeah.
And it's not guaranteed because of the margins that you're ever gonna make it back. So you're better to learn from the market and have the knowledge of other people suffering than to suffer yourself.
Because
I think that's the strongest, least utilized thing that we have is we have years and years of written history and little utilization of it.
And work harder at the job that you're at because you're going to have to keep that job to have that dream continue on. So keep the dream alive. It's been good to get back here and talk to you.
Yeah, I know. I feel like, you know, we sat down and we were like, oh, we'll just do 30 minutes real quick. Look at the 54 minutes.
Trouble at home.
Yep.
But either way. All right, brother. Thank you to everybody that's listening still.
Thanks for taking the time tonight to sit down with me and have the chat. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I know I've been finishing up a semester finals, of school, yeah. And I've been
full-time student, full-time worker, yeah.
Yeah.
Making, and full-time
farm laborer.
Yeah, farm laborer.
At my wife's farm.
All right.
But, yep, that's it for tonight, and I appreciate everybody.
We'll talk soon.
All right, thanks.